Paper 16, section 6. The oft spoken of.
That's what Don was talking about.
Old single column, page 191. All right. yes, this is the section. This is the section that is the foundation of the fifth epical revelation. I don't repeat that sentence all the time because I, you know, like the lyricism of it or whatever. This is where you begin the actual journey into the fifth epical revelation. If you had been reading the book up to this point, and the only thing that was really driving you onward was a desire to have a new religious text that you could identify with, well, you would have found some things that would have, you know, at least been construable as a religious text. You would have found a bunch of things that were pretty impenetrable, and you'd sort of just muddled through them or skipped over them or whatever. But this is the point. This is the point where they're hoping, at least at some time, you know, maybe the third, fourth, fifth time through the book, they're hoping at this section that it finally strikes you. Wait a minute. This is not a religious text. You know, it's certainly not a religious text in the old style sense of it, where it's some elaborate construct of figmentary things with, you know, spiced up with a recognition of goodness, you know, you know, which has sort of, you know, its value, its place. But in the evolutionary grand scheme of things, there comes a time when you need to take the next step. With the fifth epical revelation, this is where you finally begin to recognize it as the fifth epical revelation, not just some sort of an augmentation of the fourth. This is the point at which you recognize it as a philosophic text. This is a philosophic text. It's not a religious text. You have to have more than a sense of goodness to penetrate this revelation. You have to be able to sort out individuality, engage the details, sift through it, organize it, and then bring value into relationship with all those details, and begin to experience a superadditive consequence, a dynamic resonance between individuality and unity, a relationship to which is called truth. You know, that fundamentally dynamic aspect of the threefold actuality. You know, this, you know, must be a one-section night. Yeah, we need to spend the evening engaging the foundation of the fifth epical revelation. We'll step through it with quite a bit of detail so that we can really begin to know what the challenge is that the revelators are putting in front of us and begin to take up that challenge with earnest, you know, with earnestness and really, you know, allow that old passage from the Bible to begin to happen within us. Behold, all things are becoming new. This is the point at which, if you engage it, all things can begin to become new. This is the doorway to that newness. The three cosmic intuitions are your gateway into the cosmos. There is no other. And the only way to be guided through that threefold gateway is via revelation. So that's the journey. Let's jump in. Got a lot to cover. Start with the first paragraph here.
Six, the cosmic mind. The master spirits are the sevenfold source of the cosmic mind, the intellectual potential of the grand universe. This cosmic mind is a sub-absolute manifestation of the mind of the third source and center, and in certain ways is functionally related to the mind of the evolving supreme being.
Okay, so let's start with that a little bit. You see how there's three paragraphs that are set apart by a big break here? These are the three initiating paragraphs, so let's make sure we understand exactly what they're trying to set up here for us. Okay, so let's start with the last part there. It's functionally related to the mind of the evolving supreme being. Okay, when you say the supreme being, and you're thinking about the mindedness of the supreme being, now that transcendental he, that being, has a mind, and you can even use that fact as an alternative proper designation for that being. Instead of calling him the supreme being, you can call him the supreme mind. All right. The supreme being as the supreme mind. Capital S, capital M. That's obviously what they're talking about there. Now, of course, we all know that there's all kinds of the details of the connection between the transcendental absolute domain and the finite, and, you know, hence the evolving. And we don't need to get into all those details right here. Let's just, it's called the cosmic mind, the section. So they obviously want you to at least begin with that basic recognition. Okay, we're talking about the supreme being as the supreme mind. Okay, what else do they mention there? So they're saying that this cosmic mind is a sub-absolute. After all, we've been talking about the master spirits, or this sub-absolute expression. So the cosmic mind is a sub-absolute manifestation of the mind of the third source and center. Okay, so the third source and center. We're talking about this is a sub-absolute. Immediately above that, this is a downstep expression of, is the third source and center as the absolute mind. Okay. And the third source and center as the absolute mind, the person, just like the supreme being, you know, the person, the he fact that has that mind. When we talk about the infinite spirit, is that existential he that's at the center of the Isle of Paradise, what name do we use to designate, and we really want to emphasize that person?
Conjoint actor.
Right. Oh, it's like, wait a minute. Okay, so I have the conjoint actor as the absolute mind, the supreme being as the supreme mind. Just a couple sections back, you know, if you're in the two column here, right over on the, you know, if you look, glance over the previous page, remember how I pointed out they did that before. They mentioned conjoint actor and the supreme being. Remember I told you to watch for that. What is that again? Okay, and you have the ellipse. You have the fifth functional domain where deity is engaging us. Creature identified deity, the sevenfold. There's boundaries on that domain. Two boundaries. One on the supreme side, one on the spirit side. On the one boundary, you have the conjoint actor as the absolute mind. And on the other boundary, you have the supreme being as the supreme mind. Yeah. It's the two boundaries for this domain that's engaged or pervaded by the cosmic mind. Okay, so the first paragraph saying, okay, you have this domain that's pervaded by a mindal presence, the supreme mind, or the cosmic mind. That cosmic mind presence, there's boundaries. I mean, it's delimited. They're giving you the boundary conditions of the domain. It is on the existential side, it's the absolute mind. On the experiential side, it's the supreme mind. So that's the first paragraph. They're giving you the boundary conditions. We're just going to be talking about what happens in between the conjoint actor as the absolute mind and the supreme being as the supreme mind. Nothing outside of that. Okay, so that's the first thing. Now, just one other little thing to, you know, remind yourself of. You notice that they said it's a sub-absolute manifestation of the mind, and they used that much more general term of the third source and center. Third source and center is more than just the conjoint actor. Yeah. For instance, there's also the infinite mother spirit as the infinite mind. You might want to just keep that in mind, that that is sort of a subtext there. You know, the way they left it open like that. I mean, the cosmic mind is obviously a sub-absolute expression of the infinite mind, too. Yeah, immediately of the absolute mind, but everything above that, too. Co-infinite mind, infinite mind. Okay. So that's something to just see. Maybe that'll come back in play. So just always see that. Now, that's your first example of noticing the details and thinking about the ramifications of how they left that open. They say they purposely didn't, you know, constrain it by saying the conjoint actor like they did with the supreme being, and that would have just kept you right there. They left the top door open above the absolute mind. Okay?
On a world like Urantia, we do not encounter the direct influence of the seven master spirits in the affairs of the human races. You live under the immediate influence of the creative spirit of Nebadon. Nevertheless, these same master spirits dominate the basic reactions of all creature mind because they are the actual sources of the intellectual and spiritual potentials which have been specialized in the local universe for function in the lives of those individuals who inhabit the evolutionary worlds of time and space.
Oh, okay. A little bit more about the structure of things. You had that sort of immediate boundary conditions, as it were, around the ellipse, around the infinite eternal ellipse. The cosmic mind is bounded on each side. Here, also, this, you know, two sections back, we brought up this issue. That, remember when they pointed out that they were saying that there's a lot of mystery to the whole relationship between the master spirits and the bestowal of the ministry spirit of the local universe creative spirit, known on Urantia as the Holy Spirit. Okay. This is a very important paragraph to get, you know, to firmly get the consequences in mind. The master spirits, you know, and their immediate complements, the reflective mother spirits, you know, dealing directly with the super universe level, they aren't directly engaging us. That spirit phenomenon, that mind phenomenon, those are downstepped. So just like we pointed out back there when they brought up that connection, you have the cosmic mind in the raw, as it were, you know, directly up there at the super universe levels, you know, up in the super universe domain. And it's downstepped through the creative mother spirit into our domain. So if we're going to be talking about, and you know we are, we're going to be talking about what significance the existence of the cosmic mind has for us. Are we going to be talking about what we get by direct engagement? No, we're going to be talking about what we get downstepped through the creative mother spirit. You know, and that unity core of that ministry that's coming down, what do we call that unity core of that combination of spiritual and mindful ministry that comes down through the creative mother spirit?
Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit. Okay. you need to put all this together and recognize what isn't stated directly, that when we, you know, eventually when we get to talking about the cosmic intuitions, you know, in the cosmic mind, how do we have access to the cosmic intuitions? It's not by directly being plugged into, you know, the cosmic mind, at the, you know, the super universe domain cosmic mind. That doesn't engage us directly. We get it through the Holy Spirit. The cosmic intuitions in the Holy Spirit, like I have on the chart. That's the Holy Spirit is where that relationship with the whole, that real unity core of the cosmic mind ministry, that's how it gets to us. It doesn't get to you through agitant mind. That's the less unity-like stuff, you know, more towards individuality. The unity core is the Holy Spirit. Okay? And so basically in the local universe, you have what you would call a spirit-mind presence. You have a foundational presence that we recognize engages us, a mind ministry, culminated by a spirit ministry that's added onto that. It's a spirit-mind ministry, spirit-mind presence of the Creative Mother Spirit. Okay. When you go up, when you get out of the local universe, there's two separate presences. There's a mind presence and a spirit presence. They aren't directly hyphenated together. They're in the hands of two different sets of beings. There's the mind presence of the reflective mother spirits, and there's the spirit presence of the master spirit of that super universe. And so as you begin to move upward in your relationship to the Holy Spirit, you're going to begin to come into relationship with that transcendent of the local universe expression of this phenomenon, where there's two separate ministries, really. I mean, obviously, totally coordinated together, but much more directly separated. They tell you that the most advanced beings on a world in the fourth stage of light and life have begun to engage the Holy Spirit at such a high level. Okay, they begin to have such a relationship with a unified mind that they can begin to distinguish that mindal unity from the spirit unity of the master spirit. And on those four stage light and life worlds and beyond, you have beings that begin to have a direct recognition, awareness of the spiritual presence of the master spirit. Okay. They can do that because the Holy Spirit is not some separate ministry. It's you have the cosmic mind and it's brought down. So if you follow it back up, you'll begin to have a relationship with the source phenomena. You know, you begin to engaging mind and spirit ministry more at a super universe level than at a local universe level. Remember, that happens in the whole local universe. As the local universe begins to get settled in light and life, more and more the distinction, you know, between the super universe and the local universe begins to fade away. You know, less and less is there a downstepping. And more, it's just the beings there are directly engaging the spirit and mind ministries of the super universe. Because, you know, of course, the local universe isn't to the side of the super universe, it's inside the super universe. I mean, we're pervaded by the spirit presence of the master spirit right in this room. It's just that it's such a high unity level that none of us have any direct relationship with it. You know, it's only indirectly through all this downstepping that we have some connection to such a high, pure spirit presence. But not so when you get, you know, deep into light and life. Okay, those beings are following the Holy Spirit up. Okay? So, you know, you want this to be very clear. You know, you don't want to have it all muddled that, you know, where these cosmic intuitions are. They're in the Holy Spirit. Because that's the only way you have any direct connection to the cosmic mind that has these intuitions as part of the phenomenon that it is. And just the very fact that that's not directly stated there anywhere, certainly alluded to several places, like, you know, two sections back, you know, they want you to start logically engaging this and putting it together, because that's the whole point. In order to really get a hold of the revelation, you have to get a hold of a logical foundation within yourself. So the book is constructed that you have to choose to take that on before you're even going to get into the revelation. It's basically constructed so it's off limits for those who haven't taken delight in cultivating yet. You're not going to recognize the doorway. You're not going to see the doorway into the truth of the fifth epical revelation unless you've chosen to be able to see that door. Yeah. You have to get to paradise by choice. You're not just hauled up there in a basket. Okay? And it's very important to recognize that. All creature mind, because they are the actual sources of the intellectual and spiritual potentials. Like I was saying, you have that mind womb, and that's mindal womb and that spiritual womb up there at the super universe level that come together as one womb, a spirit mind womb down here. But if you follow back up, you begin to be able to distinguish the two. All right. Before you read that last one. So those first two, you've got sort of the when you think in the ellipse, you have sort of the sideways boundaries, and then it's reminding you that there's a vertical structure. You're not going to be allowed to, use your unmodified unity consciousness to create an anarchistic universe where it's all in a plane. You perforce must recognize there's a vertical structure. You cannot directly access the cosmic mind. You have to have it brought down and modified in order for you to gauge it. You know, basically thinking, oh, I don't need that. I believe that I'm engaging the cosmic mind directly. Well, you're on the road down the Lucifer path there. You're assuming you have a divinity of mind from the get-go that is way above your pay grade. Yeah. And it's not going to get better if you start with that sort of a thought. You need to humbly recognize how far down in the vertical structure you're starting here.
Yeah. Well, as we get higher and higher in light and life, it'll become more and more like all those other universes that are at that level. But why? It's like there'd be more and more sameness as we get more and more unit. But actually, it has to be, we would become more and more unique.
Right.
As we go up.
Right.
The purpose of each universe, each local universe, each constellation, each system would become more and more defined.
And again, it's just because the only way to really begin to appreciate all of the subtle differentiation that gives you 7 billion local systems in the grand universe, you have to have a very high level of personality functioning. The ability to engage unity with precision. Your personality is a focusing mechanism in the unity of spirit. It allows you to begin to differentiate what initially is all just a pure white blur. And primitive humans that see the pure white blur assume that's their destiny. A drop of water to blend into that pure white ocean of light. Because as you go up, you're going to have more and more personality. You're going to have more and more ability to stay individuated in the face of that incredible white background, not get spread to the four corners in it. And you'll appreciate, like for instance, you know, a very high level, like we talked about, you have a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. You know, and that's one of the incredible discoveries you have when you get to the central universe. It's like, oh my goodness, there's six other flavors of unity that I couldn't even imagine in my wildest dreams. That there could be another flavor of that pure whiteness. Isn't white just white? No, there's seven flavors of white, all just as grandly white. Pure. So, all right. So you have a vertical sort of boundary reminder. You're down, you know, there's a lot of stuff above you. And then you have the sideways sort of boundaries. They're giving you they're outlining where this cosmic mind is that we're going to be talking about. We're not going to be talking so much about the bigger footprint of cosmic mind. We're just going to be talking about what we have access to down in the local universe as a lowly animal origin being. And the only thin thread that we have is the Holy Spirit. That's where it has to begin. Like Jesus said, if you're going to start your journey into the kingdom of heaven, you start with the Holy Spirit. You start with paper 16, section 6. This is where you find the core, the starting point. All right, then what do they do after they give you the boundaries?
The fact of the cosmic mind explains the kinship of various types of human and superhuman minds. Not only are kindred spirits attracted to each other, but kindred minds are also very fraternal and inclined towards cooperation, the one with the other. Human minds are sometimes observed to be running in channels of astonishing similarity and inexplicable agreement.
Okay, so first of all, you have that general statement. Explains this kinship amongst, you know, not just humans, but celestial personalities in general. Okay. Now, do you have your material consciousness engaged? Can you focus in and notice some little details here? Not only are kindred spirits attracted to each other, and we talked about that before, and they mentioned kindred spirits, that when we were talking about spirit gravity, and the fact that we have some relationship to spirit. I mean, there's a spirit gravity that is a literal drawing power between like spirits. Okay. Then it says, but kindred minds, okay, and the next two words are key. Does it say, but kindred minds also are, or are also? The difference is everything. The difference is whether or not you can see the doorway into the truth of the fifth ethical revelation or not. Those two words and what order they're in. Okay? If you're starting out with a recognition of that kindred spirit thing, a lot of passion burning relative to that, you will misinterpret this sentence. You'll think it says also are. In other words, the fact that you're kindred spirits means that you're very fraternal and inclined towards cooperation, the one with the other. No, that's not what they're revealing. Kindred spirits don't have that. Kindred spirits aren't very fraternal and inclined towards cooperation, the one with the other. Kindred minds are kindred spirits plus that. See, they are also something that kindred spirits aren't. There's something that you can add to kindred spirits. Well, wait a minute, I thought kindred spirits was the culmination of all human evolution. No, that's the beginning. That's the fourth epical revelation. Revealing the Father, the initiator. That's how you can get started. Okay? But mind is the super additive consequence of the relationship between matter and spirit. Super additive. Kindred minds are above kindred spirits. They're kindred spirits plus something. Well, plus what? Plus this. Plus the brotherhood of man. Okay? They're, you know, and how does it say this here? It says, that they're very fraternal and inclined towards cooperation, the one with the other. You know, that's the brotherhood of man that those kindred spirits are looking for. And because it says are also, there is no way to achieve it, no matter how pure the kindred spirit phenomenon is. You can spend, and everyone on the planet can spend their whole lives trying to establish the purity of kindred spirit on the planet, and there won't be one shred of the brotherhood of man. There will just be the desire for it. There will be wishful thinking for it. Okay?
Isms in its name.
Right. The brotherhood of man that we all seek has something to do with this thing they're talking about. It's called kindred minds. This should get your attention. Okay? The three paragraphs that give you the boundary conditions, so they give some of the basic physics of this, and then they try to get your attention. Do you have an interest in the notion of the brotherhood of man? Does that capture your imagination? If so, maybe you should take delight in cultivating what this section is trying to tell you. This is the answer to what mankind is searching for. What's in this section? This is the beginning. Okay. Yeah?
And Jesus showed the living reality of that. How to do that?
He demonstrated what it looks like when you've consecrated yourself to the cosmos. He couldn't demonstrate what it's like when he was in relationship with a whole bunch of other people that had. Because there was only one faith of Jesus on the planet, his. But if we follow what the Master told us 2,000 years ago, and actually genuinely take on the faith of Jesus, which you can do. Yeah. The first section in the last paper of the book is entitled what? Do you remember? Jesus the Man. Okay. The fourth epical revelation is not Michael of Nebadon. The fourth epical revelation isn't even the life and teachings of Jesus. They tell you in the book what the name of the fourth epical revelation is. Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus is the fourth epical revelation. Jesus the man. He revealed that a man, animal origin human, can choose to have that kind of relationship to the cosmos. He revealed that you can do it. He did it as a man, not because he was Michael. They try to point out that. If you start bringing in the Michael stuff, you are taking away the fourth epical revelation from someone. They need to know that they can do it, not just that some incarnated God can do it. They need to know that they can do it. And unless they do it, we can't even start on paper 16, section 6. If you haven't established a firm relationship, a firm consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father, well, you can't take the next step. But this section is about taking the next step. This is predicated on the fourth epical revelation. Assumes that you've done that. And you'd like to take the next step. You would like to try to realize the brotherhood of man. And you need more than what Jesus revealed. You got to take the next step. All right. Now, that last thing. Human minds are sometimes observed to be running in channels of astonishing similarity and inexplicable agreement. Okay, by inexplicable agreement, do they mean, don't even try to think about it, go to the next paragraph? Probably not. Yeah. You know, what do they mean? Why inexplicable? In what sense? Well, they mean you're gonna look at these humans. You know, let's say you watch. You're observing two humans who are observing. You know, you're manifesting this astonishing, okay, similarity. And going, well, okay, I'm looking at their genetics, because I know their adjutant mind is seated on that genetics. So if they're simpatico to quite a huge degree, it must be because they're very genetically similar. No, these two are really genetically different. Huh, so it's not nature. Well, it's got to be nurture then. They must have very, very similar, you know, experiences, you know, parental upbringing, you know, environmental influences. You know, you study it carefully. No, they have radically different nurture. Their nature is radically different. Their nurture is radically different. This appears to be inexplicable from a bottom-up point of view. Yeah. What you're seeing is what mankind, you know, doesn't in general recognize, and in many cases consciously rejects. We come from the top down. It's one on high.
Nature and nurture could never get that job done.
Right. And it comes from on high. There is a universal harmony. Okay? When you see that and you can engage it scientifically and you can rule out nature and you can rule out nurture, you should be left with an inescapable recognition. Oh my goodness. There must be a universal harmony. And humans must be able to connect to it. Because these two humans have obviously plugged into something that's the same symphony. Okay? They hear the same orchestra. Okay? There must be a universal harmony. Yeah, I mean, that fact that it was inexplicable except for this recognition, that's what the Greeks figured out 2,500 years ago. They said, you know, we need to call that universal harmony something. The cosmos. Okay? This is the cosmic mind. There is a cosmos. There's a universal harmony. It is observable to those who would take the time to carefully try to understand how it is that these two individuals could be so on the same page instead of just saying, well, you know, they must have just had similar upbringing. No, study it carefully. Sometimes that'll be the case. But every once in a while, you'll kind of, it's like, wait a minute. Something else is going on here.
What's really inexplicable is they find each other.
Yeah. First paragraph, last line, is functionally related to the mind of the evolving supreme being.
That's it.
What's one of the boundary conditions on this? Yeah. The fact that there's an individuality of the whole, the whole grand universal. I mean, this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic city, I mean, we are connected together. So you know, you can just, you know, see, the more you follow that discovery and your recognition of what you discover, the more alive the cosmos becomes. It's like, oh my goodness, there is actually a cosmos, and I'm a cosmic citizen because these two people I just observed have proven to me that you can connect to that. I've just disproven solipsism. That's a lie that I was taught. There is something above me, and I do have the ability to connect to it. And I'm going to set to the task of trying to do that. Okay? Yeah. And if we all begin to do that, there's a thing that will come to pass down the road. It's called the brotherhood of man. But only when we take the light in cultivating. Okay, so, all right, so they've...
Not just
couples. When we look up for unity instead of looking down.
Right,
right. So, so that's the first three paragraphs. Is giving you, you know, especially those first two, really connecting you into some of the details of the cosmology, especially that they've given you immediately in this paper prior to this. Then seeing if they can motivate you, because if you're going to make progress in this, there's eight steps: effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and then and only then progress. This is hard work to take delight in cultivating. This is hard work to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony and have any progress in that. So you need a good, solid motivation. Does the potential of the future of the brotherhood of man give you some motivation? Well, it should if you've been awakened by the fourth epical revelation. You should have some relationship with spirit. Unity should be a burning concept in your mind now. And you would love to take it from the inner life into the outer life. You would like to see the unity that you feel inside expressed out here. How do you connect the spirit and its values to the things? You need this whole interconnecting block, a mind that's consecrated to the universal harmony. All right, so having set the stage, now they get into the details.
There exists in all personality associations of the cosmic mind a quality which might be denominated the reality response. It is this universal cosmic endowment of will creatures which saves them from becoming helpless victims of the implied a priori assumptions of science, philosophy, and religion. This reality sensitivity of the cosmic mind responds to certain phases of reality just as energy and material responds to gravity. It would be still more correct to say that these supermaterial realities so respond to the mind of the cosmos.
Oh my goodness, that didn't sound like a religious text. In fact, I think I could go back and read it about 12 times and carefully try to parse the sentences and figure out what they just told me there. Okay, I noticed things like throwing a little Latin at me. A priori, or if you want to say a priori, should maybe just mention an aside. The way I tend to do that, when it's used as an adjective like this, I'll say a priori. If I use it as a noun, like if I were to call the universal father the universal a priori, I'll say it, you know, with the long vowels there, a priori instead of a priori. That's just a way I tend to, you know, you can use it however you want, but, you know, what does it finally mean? Well, why would I call the universal father the universal a priori? Well, the father is the what? The initiator. The initiator. The father is the initiator. You know, what's this about? This is what's before. Prior. You know, a priori. And it's an expression that's used when you're getting serious about philosophy and logic and reason. It's not a religious word. It distinctly puts you into philosophy. You're not in science so much or religion. You're in philosophy. You know, it's that idea that you start with something that's before a deductive reasoning chain. You know, it's in the context of thinking about a deductive reasoning chain. A implies B implies C implies D implies E. Okay. The A priori, what you start with, the initial assumption. What initiated that chain? Okay. They're telling us that there's some issues here in play. Now, on this planet, we have a lot of helpless victims of the a priori assumptions of science, philosophy, and religion. Okay. Go back here to the beginning. There exists in all personality associations of the cosmic mind. There exists in all personality associations to the Holy Spirit. Yeah. Remember, that's what's technically in play here. None of us are plugging directly into the cosmic mind, like I said. Remind yourself of that. We are talking about our encirclement in the Holy Spirit. So it's giving us access to this. It gives us, that encirclement in the Holy Spirit gives us a quality which might be denominated the reality response. You'll be able to have a feeling in your mind, in your consciousness, that is different than any other feeling that you can have without this encirclement in the Holy Spirit. You'll go, that just feels real. I'm not delusional anymore. That's an objective recognition. That's just self-evident that that's real. And you're thinking, but boy, oh boy, that's going to be fraught with difficulty. The fact that that is potentially there, but it's so easy, I know, for me to be delusional about this. It's so easy for me to take something that's not real and falsely exalt it, even absolutize it with the absolute dimension of my personality. I'm going to have to be very, very methodical and careful about this. If I allow this possibility that there could be something that is objectively clear to me, I've got to make sure that I don't take things that are only subjective and falsely exalt them into objective. And, of course, that's one of the big problems. If you ask someone, what does the word objective mean? They say, well, that's my thoughts. My thoughts are objective and yours are subjective. That's what they think the word objective means. Okay? Now, if we didn't have this encirclement in the Holy Spirit, the word objective wouldn't be in the dictionary. Okay? But therein lies the rub. All of us have a vague notion of objective reality. Now it's just a matter of trying to get the self from being exalted into that objective reality. Do you have the humility, to constantly be, if not mitigating, militating against that tendency? It is a universal endowment of will creatures in order for a personality to engage you. Be a will creature, you have to be encircled in the Holy Spirit. Saves them from that terrible fate of being a helpless victim. Okay, and then getting into some technical details, it says, this reality sensitivity of the cosmic mind responds to certain phases of reality just as energy material responds to gravity. Okay, so initially, there's a contrasting sentence here. So initially, they're giving you kind of a gentle on-ramp thing. They're saying, you're just trying to figure out what the heck they're talking about here. And you've got the, okay, so I have some cosmic mind thing in my head, okay. And they're saying that it's going to feel a pull, just like it was a mass being pulled by gravity. It's like, okay, I kind of am getting that. So I've been given this relationship to cosmic mind, and this reality response they're talking about, so I'll feel it, it's like I'm being pulled in a certain direction. It's sort of an acknowledgement, yep, that's real. Okay, all right, maybe I get that. But then they say, well, now it would be still more correct to say that these supermaterial realities so respond to the mind of the cosmos. Oh, what are they? Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why we've been talking about all the details here. I don't literally have the cosmic mind in my head as a holistic fact. Okay, I just have the unity core of that, the Holy Spirit, and it has these this threefold reality response in it. It has this threefold supermaterial reality in it. So that's what I've got. And the cosmic mind, as a holistic fact, is above me. But I have this threefold unity core of its flavor that would resonate with it. Ah, so that's the way I should think. You have a harmony, a universal harmony. And I have a threefold way of tuning to that. I will feel a resonance. There will be, you'll get this reality response, this feeling that you're synchronized with something. You've tuned to something. You're now vibrating with the cosmos. Yeah. Okay, so that's more, like I say, more correctly what it is. You're tuning into the universal harmony. And it has this interesting threefold character they're about to explain. Because, of course, we know that universal harmony is a tri-unity, not a mere unity. It's a tri-unity. Okay, all right. So, now just maybe one other thing to bring in there, that notice there's a humility thing there again. Like I'm saying, you want at some point get it very clear that you are not cosmic mind. That you've got something that's way above you, you're reaching for, striving for, using your faith grasp to try to reach up to. And now bring there's a definite vertical structure, and you're trying to federate yourself with your faith into that unity that's above you. It's not down here with us, and we're not going to confederate in the unity that's in the plane with us. Like I see, that's Lucifer's thought. Okay? That the full divinity of cosmic mind is right here with me now, not above. Okay? So I don't need any upward grasp of faith. I just need to assert that I am the unity that I've been looking for.
Right. Okay. Right. I don't need to exercise choice.
Okay. All right. So it's very important. You know that's why they know initially, and you're still struggling. There isn't too much danger in play. But see, it's very definitively there, because when you really starts to sink in, it's got to be very clearly. There has to be a clear vertical structure in play as you engage this.
Okay. The cosmic mind unfailingly recognizes on three levels of universe reality. These responses are self-evident to clear reasoning and deep thinking minds. These levels of reality are...
Okay, well, before we go in...
I knew he was
going to
comment.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, this is all very, we could talk for hours, okay, but we need to really bring out, a lot of the details here. Okay, so the cosmic mind unfailingly responds. Oh, wait, that was the first of the two sentences. The second, in the parenthetical there, recognizes response. Okay, what technically is happening, okay, is you're going to have a threefold recognition. Okay, you're going to recognize response. You're going to recognize this resonance. You're going to recognize reality in three different phases. You're tuned in there, okay? It's very important, that recognition. This is a threefold objective recognition that they're telling you have. It's not delusional. You have this. You don't have it in any great extent by grace. You have just enough by grace so that you can get started, you know, that you can recognize that it's there in the first place. But you have to take the light in cultivating it beyond that. But recognition. So that whole bit about, but I would lead you up. And Jesus said, talking about the fear of the Lord. You know, you got that reverence thing happening, okay, with your initial spiritual consciousness, your religious impulse. Okay, that's a start. Now I would lead you up. Well, where do I go when you lead me up, Master? Well, the first thing you're going to do is recognize. Well, how do I do that? Well, you've been given a gift, the ability to recognize. The first step to go beyond reverence is to bring in the Holy Spirit and the three cosmic intuitions, recognition. Okay, and then that other sentence in there, all right, that's, you know, really drawing the battle lines here. Okay, that's throwing it right in your face. Okay. You should want that sentence to be talking about you. Okay. Are you clear reasoning and deep thinking? You'd like to think you are. Okay. But are you? Let's take an example. There's a lot of the smartest people alive who tell you that absolutely there is no ability for anything to be self-evident. Okay. So are they clear reasoning and deep thinking? It's like, well, they're so incredibly brilliant, though. Yeah, they have a lot of breadth of mind. No depth. Very shallow-minded. Okay? No depth at all. Because all it takes is a nanometer of depth. Okay? And it's self-evident. You have this self-evident recognition. Okay, so that's those other guys. But we want to bring it home. You want this sentence to be about you. And you want that to be a challenge placed right in the middle of this section, which I've told you is the foundation, the actual starting point, the doorway into the fifth epical revelation, the revelation of truth. Okay. If it's not self-evident that this section is the foundation of the fifth epical revelation, there might be some clarity and depth issues. Okay, that's the challenge. It's kind of like Jesus, you know, with the apostles. He's going to make you, they're going to make you squirm a little on this one. You need to get to the point where, you know, if it isn't self-evident that this is the starting point of the truth of the fifth epical revelation, you know, really engaging the threefold actuality objectively, then work on it. We all start out as animal origin children, where nothing is self-evident. At age 6, for the first time, something maybe could be self-evident, you know, etc. There's nothing wrong, but just take up the challenge. Get to the point where this burns with recognition. This is where it all begins. This is how I begin to change my worldview. This is how I begin to look at everything new. By taking the light and cultivating this objective clarity. You know, this, just like they said there, clear reasoning. I mean, obviously, if you've never tried reasoning before, I mean, that's, you know, okay, you got to work on that too. But you know, or thinking, you know, I mean, you got to have reasoning and thinking. But
put it aside.
But assuming there's some reasoning and thinking experience, you need to. It's not self clarified, that reasoning. It has to be chosen clear. Lucifer said, no, it doesn't have to be chosen clear. It's innately divine. It's clear by nature. Okay? And it's deep by nature. Okay? Okay, no, you have to take delight in cultivating depth and clarity. When I saw that, I knew that I didn't have that. I knew I needed to work on clarity and depth, and I took it up, as a great challenge to myself. Because it was clear to me that this is what I'd been looking for my whole life, this section, the doorway, okay, into understanding. Okay? For them to tell me, yes, you can do this. You've been given a great and divine gift, the ability to connect to the cosmos. Solipsism is baloney. Okay? Okay? Positivism is baloney. You need to take up this challenge. And so having been told that, it's like, well, I always kind of suspected that. No longer will I doubt. I'm going to take it up in earnest. Okay, so take up that challenge. Don't be afraid to recognize that you've been swimming in the shallow end of the pool for a while. It's okay. Time to get out of the kiddie pool, though. We need some adults of God, not just children of God. Okay, so there's three, like I've been saying, how they're finally bringing it out. It's a threefold thing. They're saying initially to begin to think about this, put it in levels. The hierarchy is important. Okay, put it in levels. And, before you read them, just notice the italicized words name the levels. The level of causation. Above that, the level of duty. Above that, the level of worship. Of course, we're talking true worship now. Something way beyond the sixth adjutant. Those are names they've chosen for the levels. And then, of course, we know we've come up with names for the insight in each of those levels, the intuition in each of those levels. So those are not the names of the intuitions, those are the names of the levels. All right, so let's do the first level.
These levels of reality are, 1, causation. The reality domain of the physical senses, the scientific realms of logical uniformity, the differentiation of the factual and the non-factual, reflective conclusions based on cosmic response. This is the mathematical form of the cosmic discrimination.
Okay. Very pithy, dense little paragraph that you want to carefully think about every word of. This is their initiation, of you. So you don't want to miss a single word. Take into account all the words so that you're properly initiated in each level. Okay, one of the things that after a while you come to recognize, like, another designation that speaks of the truth of this spiritual ministry of the creative mother spirit. On the one hand, I can call it the Holy Spirit. The word H-O-L-Y immediately appeals to my sacred consciousness, my religious consciousness, but then I've got a little bit of philosophical recognition. I know that comes from the word W-H-O-L-E, the whole, okay? It's the spirit of the whole, okay? And so that spiritual ministry of the whole, the individuality of the whole, is giving it to me. What's another way to understand what that's about? It's this foundational thing. It's getting me grounded. Like Jesus said, start there. Start with the Holy Spirit. Oh, it's the spirit of fact. I could create a new coinage, a new designation. Capital S, capital F. The spirit of fact, just like I have the spirit of truth. Okay, the Holy Spirit is the spirit of fact. We'll point that out directly as we go through these three. Okay, well, if it's going to be the spirit of fact, the first thing, I need to be able to recognize fact. If it's going to give me some relationship to the fullness of fact, the first thing it's got to, I mean, I have to relationship have fact, the fact of fact. That's the first fact I've got to have a relationship to. So you notice what it says, you have that, the differentiation of the factual and the non-factual. That ability to distinguish between fact and figment. Okay, that's certainly the foundation of all this. Nothing can get started until I can begin to distinguish fact from figment. For instance, my long-standing relationship with some primitive religious text, which is a vast structure of figment with goodness threaded through it. Okay, the first step is, oh, those aren't facts. It doesn't mean there's not goodness there, but most of that's figment. Okay. I need to be able to recognize that. Spirit of fact will help you with that. Get you off in a new starting point with your religious thinking, your religious consciousness. And we're not just talking about, you know, we have fact and figment, you know, it's in the matter block, and, you know, you're initially thinking, oh, it's just about matter, material fact. No, all fact, generalized fact. For instance, the fact of the sovereignty of God. I cannot know the fact of the sovereignty of God without the first cosmic intuition. And notice the scientific realms of logical uniformity. What do we call this first cosmic intuition? The logical acumen. Okay? Talking about all that logic stuff, I mean, I'm just interested in religious things. Okay, well, a good starting point for your religion is the fact of the sovereignty of God. If you haven't taken delight in cultivating your first cosmic intuition, you can't recognize that. You can be told that God is sovereign and you can believe it fervently, but you don't independently, individually know it because you've seen it, you've recognized it. Okay?
Self-evident.
Right. It has to be self-evident to you. Okay? You can't just be a helpless victim of the... Right. Right. Okay, so let's see. Let's look carefully. Okay, so now they call this the level of causation. Okay, so besides that general starting point, the recognition of fact, there's a, you know, in distinction from figment. The first cosmic intuition allows you to recognize the fact of causality. It's not something you just believe or assume or whatever. You know that there's causality. The universe is entirely logical. Everything is caused. Nothing happens just 'cause. Okay? It's causal. You know that. Anything that claims otherwise, you know, is not real. You know, you don't just believe it's not real. You engage it, and there's no reality response. It doesn't resonate. If it's causal, it rings in your mind. The harmony is felt. Okay? Okay. The fact of causality. Okay, notice it's the reality domain of the physical senses. Oh, yeah, the domain of the physical senses. No, the reality domain of the physical senses. Okay? That the physical senses aren't just, wholly subject to subjectivity.
Yeah.
They aren't doomed to subjectivity.
You aren't addressing altered states, are you?
Okay? There's a reality domain of the physical senses. You can bring objectivity into your relationship with the physical senses. Way down the road, kindred minds can describe what happened in a car accident and describe the same thing. Okay? Because they observed it objectively. The reality domain of the physical senses. They have a relationship with that. The scientific realms of logical uniformity. The word science means knowledge. Okay, this is about knowledge, giving you an objective relationship to knowledge. Of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus and how he lived it. Okay, if you haven't taken a delight in cultivating your first cosmic intuition, can you recognize that greatest knowledge? No, you don't have a reality relationship with knowledge. That sentence can be a lovely platitude that you repeat, but you don't know it yourself. It's a direct recognition, yeah? Because you haven't taken delight in cultivating, having a relationship with the scientific realms of logical uniformity, the first cosmic intuition. Reflective conclusions based on cosmic response. Okay, this one is where it's loaded. This is very, very problematic. Okay, remember they said a priori, that whole deductive reasoning thing. Well, there's another direction. A posteriori. So, you know, you have the notion of that which is starting with that which is before, and then there's the notion of starting with that which is after. For instance, one way is when you're doing deductive reasoning, you're going from something general to something specific. You're trying to zero it down to some specific thing you're trying to understand. So the other way would be going from the specific to the general. Now, that's fraught with things, problems. For instance, you could say, well, I have a very burning desire for peace on earth. Therefore, all people do. Going from the specific to the general. I'm using, that's inductive reasoning rather than deductive reasoning. Okay. Very problematic if you have no relationship to the cosmos. Notice how they word this. Reflective conclusions based on cosmic response. There can be true inductive reasoning. There can be an awful lot of false inductive reasoning. That duck is white, therefore all ducks are white. No. okay. It's like, well, how do you know? Well, it's self-evident that that's an invalid conclusion because I have a connection to the cosmos. One way is that, just that real kind of most abstract sense of going from the specific to the general in inductive reasoning there. Or, you know, now, more kind of to the point of a posteriori, it's hard to say, a posteriori reasoning, something happens and you start with the effect and then you work backwards. Like, I survived the car crash. That's when all is said and done, that's the final fact. It's in front of you. I survived the car crash. Yeah, for example, religionists often will want to go do some a posteriori reasoning from that, head backwards to find a cause. Why did they survive the car crash? You know, and they start looking through it and they see all kinds of curious details. And of course, eventually they get, well, I mean, I must have survived the car crash because God wanted me to. I mean, he's the first source and center. I mean, he's the first cause. And so that curious sequence of events that I just happened to leave, 2 minutes late because of the phone call, blah, 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 all these things that you can trace back prove to me that I have value. God made me survive the car crash because I have value. No, you don't have value because of what you are. Like the survivor of the car crash. You have value because of what you can become. So it's that bringing in reflection, seeing the big picture. for instance, knowing that one of the boundary conditions on this whole mind that I'm using is the Supreme Mind. And the Supreme Mind can adapt to both outcomes. Chris dying in the car crash, Chris not dying in the car crash. The Supreme Mind doesn't care. The Supreme Mind is not contingent upon any finite facts. I can die or live. Supreme Mind is not phased. Okay? The Supreme Mind is transcendent of all finite facts. It can get to the grand universe, settled in light and life, whether or not Chris dies in the car crash or not. Okay? I know that. So I know that's false inductive reasoning. False, what's the Latin word? Yeah, right. So you start using those. You know, that's the way you talk about them in a philosophic sense.
Well, Chris, transcendent of finite facts, that doesn't mean
posterior
prime. Has no relation to finite.
No, of course it has all relationship to finite. It has relationship to total finite facts. Right? But it's just very important, you know, to start challenging those kind of religiously fueled, especially, you know, a posteriori reasonings. You need to recognize your true value. Your true value doesn't hinge upon God's micromanagement of material objects that are swirling around your life.
God doesn't micromanage it, but it changes the evolutionary development of the Supreme Mind, or the Supreme Being, which is the accumulation of all of our experiences. If someone lives or dies in a car crash, not so much the ultimate fate of that individual, but it changes the mind because all the other minds that were connected to that individual have a response.
If you look at it from a temporal point of view, of course, the Supreme Being is already complete from a top-down point of view, so nothing that I do changes that fact. See, that's the other thing that you have to bring into play. There already is a Supreme Being who's complete from a top-down point of view. You know, and that's why it's you have to be very careful about thinking, well, if you could see all of the finite layout, it's like, well, this point in the finite took this path, and we got to supremacy. Therefore, that's the only path that could have taken. See, that's false, you know, a posteriori reasoning. Okay? It doesn't work that way. The way it really works is very hard to wrap your mind around, and we don't want to try to, you know, get everyone on that page right now. But see, that's the whole complication of the Supreme. Okay, so you have that challenge to don't throw out the notion of inductive reasoning just because there are so many pitfalls in the hands of ignorant subjective minds, you know, to going backwards, to going from a specific, an observation of a specific to the recognition of a general. Okay? That's actually the only way to found science on reality. You have to be able to have the insight to take the facts that you've observed and the limitations in which they were observed and step above them and go, oh, I know what's going on. I know what the general fact is that's in play there. You have to be able to see that. You have to allow yourself to cultivate inductive reasoning, or you don't have science anymore. You just have rationalization schemes. Yeah. Okay, and then the final thing. This is the mathematical form of the cosmic discrimination. This first cosmic intuition is about the individuality block. Well, mathematical. What was the first mathematics that you learned?
Counting.
Addition. And addition. Yeah. Can I add one number? You know, so if all there is unity,
right. There's no mathematics.
Right.
Yeah.
Dynamics is all about individuality.
Right. There's individuality, and then there's, you know, the connections. Okay. Right. Matt, you know, think of that adjective mathematical in a higher sense, just like you think of matter in a higher sense. It's the substance that fundamentally expresses individuality, like spirit's the substance that expresses unity. Okay. If you have animism, pure animism, where it's all one thing, see, there's no avenue for the first cosmic intuition. You have to allow your material consciousness to distinguish two things, separate them, and then you can think about how they're associated. Yep.
So can we say that if a particular people aren't even at where the Greeks were in 300 BC with Socrates and Plato, where they were separating, or even before, mm-hmm. separating matter from spirit and creating philosophy, mm-hmm. they're still at animism, even if they're in modern society and yeah, they're...
Sure, they're a very primitive mind still, and they certainly have no way to engage the truth of the fifth ethical revelation. Because you haven't begun to look through your windows into the cosmos yet. Again, this is an epical revelation, but not a dispensational revelation. It's not a universalizable revelation. You can't take this to New Guinea. And those guys that just discovered that there's something besides stone that you can make tools out of. They've got a long journey yet before they're ready for, you know, this level of engagement of things. They're loved absolutely by the Father. Not, you know, that's unaffected. But we're talking about more than the Father here. We're talking about this ministry from the creative Mother Spirit and these issues of higher mind. Okay, so the level of causation. Oh, there's causality. My actions have consequences. I can be a cause of effects, and people are affected by those effects. Oh my goodness. I have a duty then. What's the next notch up? If that's the first level of recognition, that there's causality, the next thing you recognize up from that is duty, the level of duty. I have a duty to the cosmos and the individuals in that cosmos, the individual members of that cosmic system. I have a moral duty, duty to the cosmos, and I have an ethical duty, duty to those individuals.
Two, duty. The reality domain of morals in the philosophic realm, the arena of reason, the recognition of relative right and wrong. This is the judicial form of the cosmic discrimination.
Okay, so we're rolling now. You see how there's very similarity to the first statement. Starts out the reality domain, the reality domain. Okay, so now we have the reality domain of morals. Oh, not just moralism of some arbitrary origin, the reality domain of morals, the objective moral consciousness. That's what this is about. Objective morality, cosmic morality. And the reality domain of morals, is it in the cultural realm? You know, like mores?
No.
No. The philosophic realm. Okay. Objective morality, cosmic morality, and philosophy are essentially one and the same thing. Okay. You don't have true philosophy until you have true morality, and vice versa. Use them to define each other to a degree. Start getting yourself going into recognition of what philosophy is really about. Yeah. It has a very core foundation in the level of duty. Okay. The arena of reason. Okay, well, we know this is the second. This is the associative one. Mind block here on the chart. You know, certainly when we say mind, we think reason. Okay, now we're talking about, and obviously in the full objective potential of reasoning. You know, it's not just going to be reasoned, rational. It's going to be correctly reasoned, logical, because this is built upon the foundation of the first level. Okay, we're talking true reasoning now. Okay, and in the first one, we have the recognition of the fact of causality. This one, we have the recognition of the fact of relative right and wrong. Okay. Remember, altogether, this is a spirit of fact, and it's a recognition ability. Now, so find the first thing that they want you to literally state like that. Something I'm recognizing, not something that I'm deducing, self-evidently recognizing that something is a fact. Relative right and wrong are a fact. Yeah, but everyone that taught me in school taught me that that's just delusional stuff that we've built up, you know, from primitive religion and stuff, the whole notion of right and wrong. You know, you can just forget about all that stuff. No, it's a fact. It doesn't matter if you don't see it. It's a fact. There's right and wrong. And I'm going to aggressively discriminate against that which is wrong. I'm going to go at it with prejudice. That is wrong, period. Okay? Oh, yeah. This is the mathematical form of the cosmic discrimination. That word that my pure spiritual consciousness doesn't like, thinks it's a wholly negative word. No, that's the word that's the doorway. Until you are discriminating, you're not a cosmic citizen. Because you blur fact and figment together. Right and wrong. Good and bad. It's all one animistic whole. Okay? Right. You're not a cosmic citizen. Okay, so the recognition of the fact. And it's not absolute right and wrong. Of course, relative. After all, even the fullness of cosmic mind is sub-absolute, like they said in the first paragraph. Okay? But it's objective consciousness. Okay? Just because it's not absolute doesn't mean it's not objective. You know, there is a whole, a universal harmony. It's an, you know, you and you come into resonance with that, and you have an objective consciousness. You know, it's a whole that transcends all kinds of details. Okay? It's not absolute, mind, but it is objective.
So could you say that when something is right when it's in harmony with the whole and wrong when it's in dissonance with the whole?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that gets a lot into the next section that we'll pick up next time. As you can see how that next section is titled and get into morals and virtue. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But in this immediate context here, see, this is the judicial form of the cosmic discrimination. This is our moral discrimination, is what we call this cosmic intuition. The judicial form, okay, like the two scales, the two sides of the scale. Yeah. You know, in the hand of Lady Justice. Okay. The pans, the two pans of the scale. What are in the two pans of that scale? Okay. On the one hand, it's individuality. And on the other hand, it's unity. Okay. You're bringing them into association and weighing them in your hands like this. Well, let's see. I need to judge this. There's the needs of the society as a whole. There's the needs of the individual. I need to balance those two. Okay, what's right in this particular circumstance? Okay, you're bringing individuality and unity, you know, into relationship on the two pans of the scale. And then you're weighing them against each other. Okay, let's go to number three.
Three, worship. The spiritual domain of the reality of religious experience, the personal realization of divine fellowship, the recognition of spirit values, the assurance of eternal survival, the ascent from the status of servants of God to the joy and liberty of the sons of God. This is the highest insight of the cosmic mind, the reverential and worshipful form of the cosmic discrimination.
Okay, so let's start. They called it the level of worship. Well, we saw how, so there's causality. My acts have consequences, so I've got duty. And when I get into duty, that first recognition, there's a universal harmony. There's a cosmos. I have a duty to that cosmos. There no other individuals in place, just me and the cosmos. I have a moral duty. Okay? This, I need to do this because if I don't, I'm not in harmony with the cosmos. That's your moral consciousness. There's no others in play. Okay? But there are others in this cosmic system. So I not only have a moral duty to the cosmos, I have an ethical duty to those others. Oh, and one of those others is the other. God the Father is one of those others. I have a duty to God the Father. He said, "Be you perfect, even as I am perfect." I have a very high duty to that other, the other, the other that I worship. When you get up to the other, and the recognition of the love that's behind that command, why did he say, "Be you perfect"? Why do you have a duty? Because he loves you. He wants to be able to see you face to face. Wants to love you in person. He can't love you in person out here. He's only personally present at the center of the Isle of Paradise. You've got to get there. Okay? And the fact that he gave you what it takes to get there inspires you to worship that fact. Okay? Word level of worship. Okay, notice, this is different. It doesn't start out the reality domain, .. It's a little bit different the way they constructed this one. The spiritual domain of the reality of religious experience. Okay, so religious experience. Oh yeah, religion. Personal spiritual experience. The reality of personal spiritual experience. But this is just the spiritual domain of the reality of personal spiritual experience. Oh, don't get personality separated here. Okay. There's four blocks on the chart. Right? The third cosmic intuition, spiritual insight, is just directly about this spirit block. The personality block is a separate issue. Okay. So this is not the personal domain of the reality of religious experience. Foundationally, it's just the spiritual component of it. That's why they purposely worded that, because they wanted to, separate that out, get that distinct. Okay? All right, but, immediately personality's in play and some things can happen. But they're reminding you that for the spirit, or for the personal phenomenon to be true, you have to have a distinct threefold actuality to begin with. You can't have matter, mind, and personality. Okay, you need matter, mind, and spirit just as a substance. Personality is a separate thing that's going to then come into play. Okay, but look where they immediately bring that in. The personal realization of divine fellowship. Well, okay, one of the things in play here, the third cosmic intuition. If I combine my spiritual insight, my third cosmic intuition, with my personality, I can have personal recognition through that window into the cosmos. Okay, so I have that faith, personal recognition. Oh, they're taking it to the next notch up, personal realization. Well, what's one way literally that I can go from recognition to realization? Well, if I take my spiritual faith and I mature it into soul trust, okay, how do I realityize my spiritual faith? If I consecrate my mind wholeheartedly to the cosmos, the adjuster can make soul substance out of that, make a copy of that out of Marantia substance, literal substance. I can have soul trust. He realityizes that mindal energy that one day is going to die. He makes a copy. And it goes on. That relationship between my consecrated mind and the adjuster is a divine fellowship, realityized, made literal soul substance. Okay, so keep that in mind. Meanwhile, back at the recognition thing. Here's the recognition. The recognition of the fact of spirit values. And you notice they very purposely put an adjective in front of values. Not talking about things that are falsely called value that are material, or falsely called value that are mindal or mental, intellectual. Spirit values. Value is a word in the spirit block. If you're going to properly use the word value, it has to be spirit fact. And through your spiritual insight, your third cosmic intuition, you have the ability to recognize the fact that there is this separate substance, spirit, that has a quality called value. And it doesn't matter how much, we call material things valuable. It doesn't change the fact that there is genuine value out of spirit, and I recognize that. The assurance of eternal survival. How does that sequence go? Faith, trust, assurance. If I start out with my faith, I mature it into trust, the consequence of that is assurance. See, this one they're really starting to take you somewhere because we've gotten up to the top. If we've worked our way fully up the first level, built on it, the second, up in the third, I have a wholehearted thing. Now my personality is really into play, and there's a whole bunch of sort of dot, dot, dots here that come into play that they're bringing in. All this personal stuff that really kicks off when you actually have engagement of the sixth level of meaning, okay, with the third cosmic intuition. The ascent from the status of servants of God to the joy and liberty of the sons of God. Servants of God, duty. Ascent, you went up from the level of duty. Okay? Yes, you have a duty to God, but there's more to it than that. You're not just, that doesn't just imply absolute servitude. The joy and liberty of the sons of God. Joy and liberty, those are spirit words. And of course, it's problematic when they get used for material and intellectual things, mindal things, whatnot. Spirit words, joy and liberty. Of the sons of God, are we ascending sons of God technically right now?
Yes.
No? No? You're not technically an ascending son of God until you fuse. Right now you're a faith son of God. Oh yeah, that's right. We're in this block. This is foundation here. Faith is a combination of my personality with my third cosmic intuition, personal recognition. The recognition part is the third cosmic intuition. Okay, I'm a faith son of God. I've ascended. Once you're up to the sixth level of meaning, now you're a genuine faith son of God. It isn't just something that is, a platitude. This is the highest insight of the cosmic mind, the reverential and worshipful form of the cosmic discrimination. Even when you're reverential and worshipful, you're discriminating. Okay? Spirit block. There's the word reverence. There's the word worship. Okay? Those words are in that block. Okay? Reverential and worshipful form. Very, this is a nice, tight little system. Okay, so that's their introduction to the three cosmic intuitions. And one of the things that you can carry away that you might not have carried away in this before is this threefold engagement of the spirit of fact. Fact of causality, fact of relative right and wrong, and the fact of spirit values. You recognize that those are facts, period. They're not just wishful thinking. Okay.
Okay, here it comes, everybody. So when I get to the last sentence, read it with me, would you? These scientific, moral, and spiritual insights, these cosmic responses are innate in the cosmic mind, which endows all will creatures. The experience of living never fails to develop these three cosmic intuitions. They are constitutive in the self-consciousness of reflective thinking. But it is sad to record that so few persons on your rancha take delight in cultivating these qualities of courageous and independent cosmic thinking.
And we're not brainwashed. Okay.
just had a strange ring.
Where have I heard that sentence before? Okay, so these scientific, moral, and spiritual insights, and of course there, you know, I mean, we call the third one the spiritual insight is sort of the pithy way. These cosmic responses are innate in the cosmic mind, which we get via the Holy Spirit, which endows all will creatures. Yes, all will creatures are encircled in the Holy Spirit. Okay, now a little bit more challenge here. The experience of living never fails to develop these three cosmic intuitions. Okay, so they're...
Makes you believe that everybody develops them.
Yeah, but... But we go, okay, these three cosmic intuitions, this threefold reality response, right? We know that's a reality response. Oh, so they mean the experience of really living never fails to develop your reality response, okay? Breathing and pumping blood is not going to do it. That's not what we mean by living here. It's like, well, how do you know that? Because I know that it's the reality response, not the actuality response. Okay, so I have to be really living.
Or you're not real.
Or you're not real. Right. You're potentially real as an animal origin creature, you know, blessed by grace from God, but you have to choose a full relationship with eternity and reality. Another place where that's said up in the Adjuster papers, one of the fun little things they do, you know, in my sentence, it's sad to record that so few, that expression, so few, you think, oh, that must occur a million times in the book. No, not very many. And they repeat it in the places where they want you to connect up with that sentence, like this one. So few mortals are real thinkers. Same sentence, okay, same fact. Do you have the spirit of fact? Can you recognize that that's talking about the same fact? It's the same so few. They also use it twice up there when they're talking about second milers. Okay. So few mortals are real thinkers. Well, what's so important about that? It's your thoughts, not your feelings, that lead you Godward. And it's sad to record that so few persons are real thinkers. So few persons are moving Godward. But I want to move Godward. Well, you gotta, it's more than wanting. Okay? You have to be real. You have to be really living. You have to wholeheartedly consecrate your mind to the universal harmony in order to be a real thinker and to be really going Godward. You won't be going up, otherwise you'll be going sideways. They are constitutive in the self-consciousness of reflective thinking. That's what does it take to cultivate these? Reflect. You have to go up to reflective thinking. And we've talked about that a lot. That whole bringing the self and the cosmos into relationship through the heart, through the center of your being, through that domain that the Holy Spirit has established, that temple within. Through the temple, the cosmos is connected to the self. It's not just the one side, contemplative prayer. It's not just the other side, contemplative worship. It's both together. It's reflection. Reflecting the self off the cosmos and the cosmos off the self. Getting them to respond, you know, in response. Getting them in resonance. Okay? But it's sad to record. Just again, like I said, I mean, there's a challenge there. You want to be really living. You know, you don't want to say, no, I don't want to be really living. I'll just be, breathing. And I mean, you know, that doesn't make you feel, that doesn't satisfy your soul to say that to yourself. You know you've got to take up this challenge. They've just pointed it out that merely living is not what you want. It's like, I know it. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take up the challenge. I'm going to take delight in cultivating being really living. I'm going to take my genuine relationship with goodness in the inner life, which I most likely have. I've got some relationship to the fourth epical revelation. If I don't have it already, I'm going to cultivate a genuine relationship with facts in the outer life. And I'm going to bring the two into relationship. I'm going to be really living in the dynamic, super additive consequence of the relationship between an inner life and an outer life, a genuine inner life and a genuine outer life. Not just my goodness and figment, goodness and fact.
I'll be really quick, but there's a place that says the contemplation of the immature and inactive human intellect should lead to
humility.
Feelings of profound humility or something like that. Yeah.
Profound humility.
I don't remember what that meant, but
it goes so right along with that. Inactive, immature, and inactive.
Humility and patience.
I was just noting here, it says the experience of living. And I remember one time I looked up what experience means, and it means to try.
Experiment.
Yeah, experiment, yeah. So if you're not testing your relationship to the world, and you're just floating along,
right,
you're not living. Right. You're not experiencing life.
A truth seeker.
You've got to engage the world to have that experience.
Right. You've heard me talk about this. I mean, a genuine truth seeker is attempting to refute the ideas in their mind. They're putting them to the test. They're experiencing. Okay. All right, let's do the big paragraph there.
In the local universe mind bestowals, these three insights of the cosmic mind constitute the a priori assumptions which make it possible for man to function as a rational and self-conscious personality in the realms of science, philosophy, and religion. Stated otherwise, the recognition of the reality of these three manifestations of the infinite is by a cosmic technique of self-revelation. Matter energy is recognized by the mathematical logic of the senses. Mind reason intuitively knows its moral duty. Spirit faith, worship, is the religion of the reality of spiritual experience. These three basic factors in reflective thinking may be unified and coordinated in personality development, or they may become disproportionate and virtually unrelated in their respective functions. But when they become unified, they produce a strong character consisting in the correlation of a factual science, a moral philosophy, and a genuine religious experience. And it is these three cosmic intuitions that give objective validity, reality, to man's experience in and with things, meanings, and values.
It's a big paragraph because they're putting it, they're bringing it all together. Okay, step through it a little bit. Notice how they start out. They bring it full circle. And there's the a priori again. The a priori assumptions. So if I don't want to be that helpless victim of the implied a priori assumptions of science, philosophy, and religion, what do I have to do? Tell me right here. The three cosmic intuitions are those initial assumptions. Okay? They constitute the a priori assumptions. That's what you're looking for. You know, that's if you're going to have a true ethics, it has to be predicated on a genuine moral consciousness. For instance, that's the initial assumption. That's where you start. You start with your connection, your resonance with the cosmos, and then it goes from there. And again, see, this is it's a philosophical thing. That's why they're purposely using that Latin expression. And notice, I'm repeating science, philosophy, and religion.
And Chris, yep. Science, philosophy, and religion have a relationship to these words, causation, duty, and worship.
Right.
They're just the higher form.
Right. We have all of these different ways of the threefold actuality is expressed, and we can understand it. Let me just bring that, since you mentioned that. But where does it all start? You know, where does this paragraph end? Things, meanings, and values. Okay, brings it all back to the very first thing that's revealed in the fifth epical revelation, in the third paragraph of the revelation. Things, meanings, and values. It's the first thing they reveal, that there's a threefold actuality, and that's the foundational triplet that you engage it with. Okay. The only thing they revealed before that is the word urantia. That's other than the word urantia, that's the first thing that's revealed. Things, meanings, and values. That's the foundation of your engagement of the threefold actuality. So coming back with the a priori, then, stated otherwise, the recognition of the reality of these three manifestations. Again, that's kind of like the fact of facts, you know, the reality of reality. You know, you have to recognize that there's an objective reality. It has to just be self-evident. But the three manifestations of the infinite. That's a curious way to talk about it. How can we think about that? Well, from a seven absolutes of infinity, a bottom-up point of view. Above all that is the infinite, so I could think of it that way, coming down from the infinite. What else could I do with that? Well, let's see. We talked about really living, and when we get into higher recognition, we know that the infinite, as a facet of deity, we can think of that as the reservoir for life animation. I'm going to be really living. So that's another way to think about it being a manifestation of the infinite. Okay. What else can I do there? Well, when we think about another way of thinking about it, starting with the infinite, and I can make expressions of it. Well, what if I took the infinite and I made mind out of it? and be called the infinite mind, the infinite made mind. Ah, yeah, that's right. Way back there, I noticed that they didn't restrict me to just a conjoint actor. What is in play here, of course, is mother, the individuality of the whole. Because I look in there and I see these three basic factors in reflective thinking may be unified and coordinated. Mother word. Okay. In personality development, or not. If all I have is my consecration of my will to the Father, most likely what's going to happen is you're going to hyperfixate on the third cosmic intuition. You know, you'll have a little bit of the second because it's right next door, not much of the first, and you're going to get way out of balance. You can't just consecrate your will. You have to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God, the Mother, so it can be unified as a triunity, coordinated in personality development. Personality is a thing that can wrap around all three phases of the actuality. And you're going to have a strong character then if you've consecrated your mind. See, and it's going to consist of the correlation of a factual science. A factual science, like test tubes and... No, a factual knowledge. Do you want to have a religion that has no relationship to knowledge? Is that what you really want? A fabrication of your own wishful thinking? That's destined to crash when it comes into conflict with objective reality? No, you don't want that. You want a factual science, like a genuine relationship with the outer life. Like I said, and a genuine inner life and a moral philosophy that links the two together that you can really live. You can only really live philosophy. You can't live science or religion. It is these three cosmic intuitions that give objective validity. This is your objective consciousness, reality. Demands experience in and with things, meaning as values. And notice even in and with. And you're immersed in them, and you can strike step with them. If you take delight in cultivating. Otherwise, you're just in them. Buffeted about by them. You try to get yourself lined up with them so you aren't batted around. Because things and meanings and values are not going to go away.
Straight step.
Yeah. And it's a very complex triunity flow. You don't just do it tomorrow. It's going to take some serious cultivation. All right, and when all is said and done, what's the bottom line here?
It is the purpose of education to develop and sharpen these innate endowments of the human mind, of civilization to express them, of life experience to realize them, of religion to ennoble them, and of personality to unify them.
So ask yourself a simple question. What did I say up front? I said this is the foundation of the fifth epical revelation. Okay, is that an overstatement? Have I stepped beyond the bounds of reality here? No. Look what they've just said here. Okay? It's all, everything is predicated on a relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. Everything. Okay? It is the purpose of education to develop and sharpen your relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. It's the sole purpose of education. It's like, okay, so those incredible intellectuals that deny the ability for something to be self-evident, they may even deny the very fact of objective reality. Are they really educated? No, they're not really educated. They're educated, but they're not really educated.
Let's, really educators.
And they're not really educators either then, yes. Okay, let's take Chris Halverson, who has a PhD in physics. Okay, I went from first grade all the way to a PhD in physics. Did anyone ever talk about the three cosmic intuitions? In even any vague, indirect way? Not even remotely close. Am I really educated? No, not because of that. This is what's made me really educated and beginning to really live. Okay. Yeah, it's sad to record that there's not really education in play. How about the next one? So it says, it's the purpose of civilization to express the relationship to the three cosmic intuitions. Now let's think about what we call civilization. Are we really civilized? No. Very primitive. Okay. Because we now know what it means to be really civilized. It means the civilization that we exist in is consecrated wholeheartedly to expressing our relationship to the triunity, to the universal harmony. That's what real civilization looks like. Do we have some work to do? A little bit. Okay. It is the purpose of life experience to realize them. So are we really living? No. Yeah, we've already talked about that one. It is the purpose of religion to ennoble the relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. It's the purpose of religion to ennoble the relationship to the three cosmic intuitions. So do we have real religion? No. No. It is the purpose of personality to unify your relationship to the three cosmic intuitions. Why did the Father give you personality? For one purpose. Okay? If you haven't taken delight in cultivating, consecrating your mind to the universal harmony, does the personality have anything to do? No, its sole purpose is to unify that which you have no relationship to. So it's doing the thumb thing. It's twiddling its thumbs. Okay? So, is there really personality being expressed in this world? No. No. It's sad to record that so few persons. Okay? We're not being really educated. We don't really have civilization. We aren't really living. We don't really have religion. We aren't really personal. We're just fancy animals.
If we're not personal, how can the thought adjuster function? Right. It's twiddling its thumbs.
Right, and so is the spirit of truth.
Yeah, is anything okay. Made soul?
Right. Okay. Like Jesus said, it all begins with this section, the doorway to reality. Okay? You have to pass into and through this section. In a full, wholehearted relationship, no word left unexamined and unrecognized. Okay? Discover this section. Recognize this section. Interpret this section. And now choose. Choose to go through the door. Okay? Begin your relationship with the fifth epical revelation to mankind. Okay? Because we need this last paragraph. We really, really need civilization. We really, really need religion. We really, really need cosmic citizens, genuine personalities functioning on the earth, okay? Moving us toward the brotherhood of man. We really, really need that. And there's only one way to do it. Three cosmic intuitions. Not just the third, not just the second and the third. Especially if you're starting from a spiritual consciousness, a religious bent, you've got to take on knowledge, an objective relationship to knowledge. Okay. All right, so now, you know, next week we'll start in on the essay, their three-section essay on the consequences of what's just been revealed. The more you've engaged what's in section 6 here, the more you can get out of section 7, 8, and 9. I mean, every chance you get, sit down and reflect on it. You have to be able to see everything in this section. You know, it has to be independent cosmic thinking. You have to do it. Michael can't do it for you. You know, he's like, well, can I borrow his mind? Like he said, no. Not even that's going to work. You have to do it. You have to take the light and cultivate it. If you do, that thing that Michael sent, you know, will step in and foster some more recognition, a very direct recognition of truth, the recognition of the fact of truth. Yeah, but it all starts here. If you haven't prepared a place, if you haven't supplied the favorable conditions, the other ministries can't work with you. You have to take the light in cultivating. So let's do it. That's the challenge that the fifth epical revelation has put before us. This is it, this section. You know, it's why, you know, I repeat that over and over. There's a million things that are problematic in the world, but they all boil down to one fact, the lack of relationship to the three cosmic intuitions. There's no purpose being manifest. Yeah. It's only through them that purpose can flow. All right, let's take a moment here.